This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Congratulations to our boss, Adam Klug. I know you didn't get to watch much college football on Saturday with your soccer coaching and roping and Julian that you were doing. But, Paulie, you watched some college football, and the number five-ranked Georgia Bulldogs went into Austin, Texas, and just handed it to the number one team in the country. What, 23-0 in the first half?
Yeah.
Really spoiled the party for all those Texas Longhorns fans. Made a game of it in the third quarter, but ultimately 30-15, and Georgia hands Texas their first loss of the year.
Yeah, I had most of the games going on Saturday, and I think it was Tennessee-Alabama was 12:30, so I was watching that game, and they were previewing the whole day. They were previewing Texas-Georgia. Right. They said over 105,000 people were expected on that. And then they had like their alternate crew or a couple of like new reporters working sidelines for that game because they had other people there for F1 was also in Austin
Good
yesterday.
Lord.
Like Austin was like the center of the sports universe.
Saw that. Yeah, weekend. They had the Cowboys cheerleaders, the Texas marching band all at that F1 race yesterday in Austin. So yeah, it must have been an absolutely insane weekend in Austin, Texas. But they're not happy about Texas losing. This is about as wide open as college football's been.
It really is.
In a long time. With the 12-team playoff, it was already going to be like open to more teams. And now, you know, Oregon takes over as the new number one team in the country after they shut out Purdue on Friday night 35-0. They have had no trouble in their move to the Big Ten.
None. 7-0.
Unlike USC, which lost for the fourth time.
Yeah, buddy.
Losing by 1 point to Maryland. I think their four losses are by less than two touchdowns combined. But they're dead in the water. You know, you're not going to make the playoffs with four losses. But now you have every SEC team already has a loss. And we're only in mid-October.
Right.
It's the earliest, I think they've said, that's ever happened that every SEC team has lost. Alabama now has two losses, Paulie, in that game that Tennessee was able to pull it out in the second half, 24-17. So,
how shocking is that? I mean, it's just
wild to see a two.
Two, I know.
Alabama's record.
This tweet murdered me this weekend. This guy tweeted, USC left for the Big Ten thinking they'd be like Michigan and Ohio State. It turns out they're just beach Purdue. Like, and then another one was like, these guys really, they really joined the Big Ten, ruined the Pac-12 for everybody, them leaving, and to fly across the country to lose to Minnesota and Maryland. Like, unbelievable. So I'm reveling in it. I hate Lincoln Riley. I've never liked Lincoln Riley. I told you guys when you got Lincoln Riley, he's a fraud, and he's been one big, massive fraud.
It's wild, though. I'm conflicted because I don't know still how I feel about conference realignment. Like, over the last couple of years, it's kind of sucked to sit back and watch. And maybe that's because we have a Mountain West school here in our backyard. But it's just been kind of like, there's just been something kind of dirty about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you watch this season and you're like, there is premier matchups every single weekend. Teams are beating each other, but the top 10 is still like incredibly fascinating. And you just have a great, at least one or two good games every single week. And you're like, crap, it actually worked.
It's almost like they knew what they were doing a little bit.
It totally worked.
And, you know, even with two losses, you know, Alabama's not out of a playoff race at all because with 12 teams, you can bounce back with two losses, which is why this is better. It was never a good idea to have a format where two or even one loss sometimes, or last year for Florida State, zero losses and you're already eliminated. You had no chance to make it. Yep. Now it's gonna be wild. I mean, you have beyond Oregon, other undefeated teams. Miami continues to sneak by. Somehow the Hurricanes are still undefeated. You've got Iowa State undefeated. BYU is undefeated. Indiana looks like they're for real.
What in the world?
They slaughtered Nebraska, who had been 5-1, 56-7.
That is ungodly.
I mean, maybe probably the best football team Indiana has ever had in the history of the school this year.
No respect, by the way.
And then you have the teams that'll be fighting for that non-power four spot. Army and Navy among them. Both of those teams still undefeated in the top 25. So you have like wild chaos in college football, and I do think it's good for the sport. The UCLA Rutgers game was not good for the sport. Those kind of conference matchups where you have kids that have to fly across the country for meaningless games between, you know, 1-4 and 2-3 teams in their conference is not is not all that healthy. But for college football fans and viewers, I feel like there's been more big games every single week than I can ever remember in college football. And it's because I think of the new playoff format and some of the college football realignment, to be honest.
Yeah, man. Irish played Navy this weekend. I am a panicked mess. They look fantastic.
Yeah, Notre Dame's still in it with one loss, one obviously. Loss. They beat Georgia Tech 31-13, so they're not out of it either. But Navy is certainly going to be looking for the upset this week and another, you know, oh, lots of big games.
Stupid option.
In college football. Need a contestant for Take on Woods if you want to call us. 833-288-0973. 833-288-0973. We got tickets to a sold-out show for Social Distortion on the line this week.
Yes.
You like that?
Love that.
Sold out at the Observatory, North Park. So a good venue.
We'll be in Texas. Smaller. My wife is so disappointed. We'll be in Texas for the holidays.
But you can win them by beating or tying Woods and Take on Woods, our musical trivia challenge. Coming up momentarily, 833-288-0973. The phone lines are open right now if you want to call and play our game in a couple of minutes.
It's been interesting this month. We've switched things up just a little bit. Obviously, if you've been paying attention, we haven't had the qualify for a Vegas getaway.
Yeah.
So with concert tickets like this, you're calling in to win them, and if you lose, they go up for grabs later in the show.
That's exactly
so
right.
So as the listener, unfortunately, the other tier ones are rooting against
it's
you.
It's like that's you have to cheer for the Yankees.
That's right. You have to root for me.
Woods.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they're up.
You don't want the other team to win this time.
They're up for grabs if I could pull out a win.
Football yesterday, did you get to watch any of the NFL?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Very little.
There were some good games. Obviously, we talked about Chiefs and 49ers.
I bet the Chiefs, so I watched that game, and
it wasn't a great game. It's like every Chiefs game this year has been kind of not great, and the Chiefs have ended up winning it, but they haven't, you know, been that impressive, even though they're the only undefeated team left.
I would say if you lose your top three receivers and you're going up against the Niners defense, you know, like that, I'd say it's pretty impressive to be able to get that dub handily.
Winning six games in a row or whatever in the NFL is not easy.
Pretty handily.
They'll be there.
Patrick Mahomes, having him as your quarterback is a pretty solid. It's a solid balm for when you lose your top three receivers.
How many Super Bowls have they been to in the last 5 years? Like four? Yeah. Like you almost feel like they know they just got to do the. They know exactly what they need to do to get to the postseason, and then they turn it on.
That's exactly right. So I thought that game was. I mean, you're pretty bummed if you're a Niners fan. They have not had a great season. 3-4 right now. I watched that game. It was that was my bet of the week. It was minus 1.5 for the Chiefs, and they covered easily.
I thought the most impressive wins, obviously the Lions going on the road and beating the undefeated Vikings. Really good game, back and forth. He had the fumble return. Touchdown for the Vikings to give them the lead in the fourth quarter as they came back. But then Jared Goff drives the Lions down the field. They kick the field goal to win at 31-29. Both teams now with one loss, but that looks like it's going to be a good race in the NFC North all the way to the end of the season. Last night, the Steelers. Mike Tomlin got so much flack for putting Russell Wilson in at quarterback after Justin Fields had gotten them, you know,
he had a
solid start.
Games, yes.
And then they go and just trash the Jets, so, especially in the second half. And like, okay.
So I was watching baseball, obviously, but I kept, you know, I was looking at Twitter the whole time, and people were like, oh my God, Tomlin's got to go. How do you make this decision? How do you make this decision? Was it a really sloppy first half?
It wasn't. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't great. Russell Wilson threw some really bad passes, like, you know, Denver Broncos era Russell Wilson passes. And you're going, this is bad. And Mike Tomlin said, I was kind of on an island, even here in the building.
Yeah, dude.
Everyone's going, what are you doing? We're winning with Justin Fields. And his rationale, though, I thought made a lot of sense. He goes, I wanted to see both quarterbacks. I want to answer these questions now, as opposed to not knowing in December, you know, in the playoffs and see what I've got. So I wanted to play him. And guess what? I mean, you know, Russell Wilson ended up looking pretty good. The passing offense was better than it had been under Justin Fields. And they've got a good team. So, you know, and the Jets just looked pretty awful, especially in the second half. Even with, you know, Devontae Adams now didn't seem to really light any spark with the New York Jets.
Saw a couple drops from him.
I mean, they've got they're 2-5. They got a pretty easy schedule, so they're not out of it. But they, I mean, they've got their work cut out if they can even come back to win like a wild card at this point. And I thought the other team that you know was a big win, the Green Bay Packers beating the Houston Texans. That was actually a sneaky. We didn't even talk about that sneaky big game. Jordan Love, 3 TD passes.
He's a good player, man.
I think the Packers are under the radar Super Bowl contender in the NFC.
And I think the most under the radar team is the Washington Commanders. I mean, there's I mean, they are as under the radar as it gets. Trounce Carolina, which is that's no great feat.
Putting up big numbers.
You're putting up big numbers. Jaden Daniels has been really, really good. Got a little injured yesterday.
Rib injury. They'll have to keep an eye on that. So there was some good football yesterday. Keep an eye on that. It looks like we got a contestant on the line.
Let's go.
Terry, you're up. Let's play a little Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Woods. Woods.
All right, Take on Woods is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Good morning to you, Terry. How are you?
Hey, love your show. Morning.
Thank you for calling in. All right, you got 5 questions of musical trivia head-to-head against Woods. If you beat or tie him, you will win instantly. We've got tickets to see Social Distortion at a sold-out show on Friday, December 20th at the Observatory North Park. Woods very excited about this prize, and he's going to try to keep it from you so we can give it to other Tier 1s later. But this is your chance, and you get the choice of category to give you the advantage. We've got On the Chessboard, songs with chess and chess pieces in the title. Twice as Nice, those are song titles with the same word repeated twice. And Hand Over Fist, 5 musical questions and answers about things you'll find on your hand. So, On the Chessboard, Twice as Nice, or Hand Over Fist. Terry, what would you like to play?
Twice as Nice.
Twice as Nice. All right, today's category is filled with song titles with the same word repeated twice, just back to back. You'll have 60 seconds to answer as many of the 5 as you can. If you don't know an answer, pass. We'll come back to it if there's time left on the clock. First question is the 2-second song. Paulie's going to play a little music. You need to give me that double word song title and the artist. Two part question to score that point. Terry, are you ready to play?
Let's do it.
All right. Again, the category Twice as Nice. 60 seconds on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Terry. Let's take on Woods.
Double Rubble.
By?
David Bowie.
Correct. The Mutual of New York building inspired which classic by Tommy James and the Shondells, later covered by Billy Idol in 1981?
Money, money.
Correct. It's one of the most recorded songs in rock and roll history, but it's a version of which tune by the Kingsmen that appears in the 1978 movie Animal House? Oh, his phone's breaking up. Repeat that one. Yeah, I heard it. Oh, I hope his phone clicks in. Which 1966 classic by the Mamas and the Papas includes the line, "Can't trust that day"? Oh, his phone's dying. I think you got it. Give it to me one more time. There it is. I heard it. British new wave band Naked Eyes followed up their successful debut cover of Always Something There to Remind Me with which original hit that reached the top 20? I feel so bad. His phone just killed
I couldn't hear anything.
I heard it just... I doubt you heard it on the radio, but I think he got the first 4. Rebel Rebel by David Bowie, Moni Moni, Louie Louie, Monday Monday, but we did not end up with time for Promises Promises. Hang on the line, Terry. I don't know. I think Woods is going to do well on this category. We'll see. It's a good score, though. And it's a bad phone line. Terry had a bad phone line, yet put up a decent score.
Okay.
See how he does against you.
Guy's making the most of his opportunity.
Exactly.
Okay.
No category for Woods. 60 seconds back on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Terry.
That is Rebel Rebel by David Bowie.
Correct. The Mutual of New York building inspired which classic by Tommy James and the Shondells, later covered by Billy Idol in 1981?
I'm going to come back to it, Pat.
It's one of the most recorded songs in rock and roll history, but it's a version of which tune by the Kingsmen that appears in the 1978 movie Animal House?
Louie Louie.
Correct, which 1966 classic by the Mamas and the Papas includes the line, "Can't trust that day."
Monday, Monday, and the Billy Idol is Moni Moni.
Correct. British new wave band Naked Eyes followed up their successful debut cover of Always Something.
Promises, promises.
Yeah. That's just going to do it. Yes. 5-4.
Yes!
Terry never even got to the last question because of the phone trouble. We had to keep having repeat his answers, so we never got to that last one.
Promises,
sorry,
promises,
Terry.
Rules. Really, it's all really of those songs are pretty good.
And that category, of course, was called Twice as Nice.
I would have called it The Repeater.
That would have been effective as well. Terry, you can always try again, hopefully with a better phone next time. You did a very nice job.
Very nice job.
Unfortunately, Woods wins this edition.
I almost said Rebel Yell, by the way.
That would have been wrong.
Yeah, the first one was Rebel Rebel, and then it was Billy Idol. I was like, it was Rebel Yell. But I'm like, nobody, that's not a cover of a song.
You could have gone Rebels. Rebels would have been, yeah.
Rebels, Rebels.
All the Rebel cat. I don't know if there are any more Rebel songs than those two.
I'm sure there are some Rebel songs.
All right, we've got Don't Do This coming up next. I mean, there are so many candidates that I think even...
you do an hour.
Even Deshaun Watson getting booed off the field with an injury by his own fans doesn't even make it this week,
that's
unfortunately.
Crazy. Ken Rosenthal's up to his old
you
tricks
again. You always will include a little Ken Rosenthal if you can. Indeed. All right, we'll get to that coming up after a check of traffic with Ben Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot, you moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Woods, you have it out for Ken Rosenthal.
I do not.
At this point.
I this is from Awful Announcing. This isn't a Woods thing.
I
didn't even know about this until I saw Awful Announcing.
I don't disagree. I think Ken has done more to harm his own brand this postseason
100%.
Than I can remember really any reporter in quite some time.
No doubt.
Without
no doubt.
Like committing a crime or something.
No doubt.
He has really gone from fairly, not everyone's favorite. I mean,
right.
He certainly had his moments, but I've gone from like, yeah, I'm okay with Ken Rosenthal to like, okay, this is now someone I am not a fan of anymore.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously, we know what happened here. And then last night on the broadcast, he had this to say.
Kenny?
Well, Joe, you make a great point. It took incredible discipline for Roberts not to chase those victories in Game 2 and Game 5. And frankly, it was not a great look, effectively conceding postseason games. But should they hold on, the end will justify the means. He had to manage this way because he was shorthanded. Shorthanded with his rotation, shorthanded in his bullpen once they lost Alex Messi.
So essentially, Kenny, and a lot of Met fans got very, they're like, oh, so we didn't win those games. The Dodgers let us win those games. It was brilliant managing by Dave to punt. By the way, just think about what he just said. Brilliant managing to punt two games in a series that, you know what, man? It's not like the Mets were loaded for bear with starters either. It's not like every team that's left in the playoffs, well, there's only two left now, but are loaded for bear starting pitching-wise. We get it. We know Tyler Glasnow got hurt. We know that. You still paid $324 million for Yamamoto. You still have Jack Flaherty, who you traded for. You still have an elite bullpen. Like, the Mets won those games. They did it from their own volition, not because Dave Roberts allowed them to win those games, effectively punting those. And I liked what Awful Announcing said. They said, look, you can credit Roberts' handling of the pitching staff without saying that he was effectively conceding games and praising his incredible discipline for doing so. There's a difference between managing wisely to set your team up better, to bounce back from a likely loss. One sounds like it's crediting a skipper for situational awareness. The other essentially says the series went six games because the Dodgers gave two to the Mets. Met fans were livid.
I would think even Dave Roberts would push back on that. Like, we didn't concede either of those games. You know, it didn't go the way we wanted it to go. But they started Jack Flaherty in Game 5.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't pitch well. I mean, what do you do at that point? Just throw all your high-leverage relievers when you're already down a bunch of runs early? No, that's...
Right.
That would be dumb. That would be dumb managing.
Yeah, no doubt.
If you want to give credit for Dave Roberts for not being an idiot when, you know... Yeah, you can't use your best relievers every single game, even in the postseason. We all know this already.
Everyone knows this. This isn't some incredible discipline.
Yeah, it's not some revelation that Dave Roberts has discovered that, oh, you mean you can't pitch your closer every inning of every game of the postseason? No, you can't.
Yeah.
And that's not insight.
Well, like I said earlier, man, the narrative around Dave Roberts has changed, certainly, but we'll see. Still got four more games to win.
All right, I'll go to college football. We talked a little bit earlier about the Georgia Bulldogs win over number one Texas. In that game, a little bad behavior from Texas fans who threw bottles onto the field after a controversial pass interference call resulted in a delay in the game. And today, the Longhorns have been fined $250,000 by their new conference, the SEC, damn, for fans throwing trash onto the field. They've also issued an apology. Here's the problem, though. It actually helped the team
out. It helped them, yeah.
So they were down 23-8 in the third quarter, and they intercepted a pass, but the defensive back was called for pass interference. And referees were set to move on. They, 15 yards for Georgia, get them closer to the end zone. But then fans threw a bunch of bottles onto the field, causing a delay. And while that delay was on and they were cleaning up, the official decided to discuss it a little bit more and go, we're picking up the flag and the interception counts. And it actually helped Texas get back into the game with a chance to win it. So essentially, you were rewarding fans for their bad behavior by giving their team another shot. And Kirby Smart was really mad about it. He said, now we've set a precedent. If you throw a bunch of stuff onto the field and endanger athletes, you've got a chance to get your call reversed. And that's dangerous. That's not what we want. That's not criticizing officials. That's what happened.
Yeah, it's true. But it was nice to see, you can't ever do that. It was nice to see Coach Sarkisian get on the mic and tell them to stop. That's something that we're missing in at least other sports that I've seen recently. Getting on the mic and telling your fans, don't act like absolute imbeciles and put players in harm's way. I've seen it in basketball. Coach gets on the mic. Seen it in soccer. Now we've seen it in college football. Be nice to see that accountability in other sports.
All right, finally a little doo-doo this.
D-D mega doo-doo.
I really enjoyed the Guardians-Yankee series, and I thought the Guardians won the hearts and minds of a lot of people with the way that they played and really never quit. And those games were electric, almost every one of them. They were just so good. And I really think Stephen Vogt, as a first-year manager, thrown into that situation, leading his team, and really just a couple of moves away, you felt, from the series changing. But he got up on the podium, and listen to this for a minute. This, yes, talks about baseball, but this is also very applicable to anything you do. If you're a musician, if you're a radio host, if you're a dad, a mom, whatever it may be, this is just good life advice from Guardian skipper Stephen Vogt.
The way I do it is I ask myself what's true. You can write a narrative in your head and spin yourself down a negative path and beat yourself up and second guess and go back. But what's true is you made what you thought was the best decision in the moment, and then you leave it behind. And I have a mentor of mine that says, learn the lesson, leave the event. You leave the event behind and you learn everything you can from it. And there's no going back. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone makes good decisions, bad decisions, or they just didn't work.
I guess there was more to that. But he was just essentially saying, like, I can live with my decisions. I'm not going to beat myself up. The decisions I made in the moment, I was trying to make the right decision. In hindsight, yeah, probably don't pitch to Giancarlo Stanton with the base open a couple times. You don't let him beat. Yeah, and you wonder, Dave Roberts watching that going, yeah. But the thing is about baseball is you always wonder, I think, if you're a skipper. And I tweeted over the weekend, managing the postseason has got to feel like a catheter is being put in and taken out, put in and taken out, put in and taken out for 4 hours.
Ow.
Right? Like laying on a table, just a root canal. What's the worst thing? Like a surgery without anesthesia for 4 hours. Every move you make can spiral. There's also that thing in baseball where you look at it and go, yeah, Giancarlo has been really good in his career in postseason, but he still swings it a lot. If I can get him to chase, I want to get this out.
Well,
here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, I was reading somewhere this weekend that one of the ways you establish a great culture is you have to have it's 100% okay to make mistakes,
yes,
and unacceptable not to learn from them.
Correct.
So did Did Stephen Vogt not learn from his mistake when he threw to Giancarlo Stanton? If the Padres had simply, we gave up a home run to Shohei Ohtani in his first at-bat of that series and walked him every time. They actually did a good job.
They adjusted a great point to him.
It doesn't mean you never throw to the guy again because he hit a home run off of you.
Keeping it real says you look at the analytics. Okay, like, the analytics aren't always right. If the analytics were always right, then you wouldn't need a manager.
And by the way, on that second Giancarlo Stanton home run of 2 days, the catcher was like, he was set up way outside. It was not supposed to be there. The pitcher,
he missed a spot.
Missed his spot. Yeah. And, you know, Giancarlo Stanton made him pay. Should he have walked him? Yeah, in the hindsight, of course.
It's a great point you make about Shohei. First AB off Dylan Cease in the postseason against the Padres, he hits one 500 feet. Didn't do anything, really, after that. But that Mike Schilt didn't give him the four fingers every time he came up. You know, they found a way to maybe try to get him out, get some weak contact. I think, you know, it is it's matchups, it's all of that. But I think I love what Stephen Vogt had to say. It's just a good life lesson too. Like you can't be afraid to fail, and you got to live with your mistake because you can't change it. You got to just try to learn from it the more you go. But he's a good manager, man. Really good manager. What a first season for him.
And that's Don't and Do This for a Monday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
By the way, bonus Do This, just so I don't forget to bring it up. Congratulations to Ricky Pearsall of the 49ers, who had his first catch yesterday. If you'll remember, Woods, Ricky Pearsall was shot in the chest like 7 weeks ago. And actually lived and got back on the field and got to play and make his first catch in the NFL yesterday, which is a pretty cool moment.
Pretty staggering.
All right, we'll come back. So A.J. Preller is going to speak this morning at 11 o'clock. What is he going to do this offseason, and what is he able to do this offseason after the latest payroll analysis of the Padres coming back in 2025? We'll take a look ahead for Padres fans coming up next on 97.3 The Fan. All right, A.J. Preller at 11 o'clock this morning. Well, you called for it, Woods, last week. You demanded an end-of-the-year Zoom news conference, and you're getting it.
Well, yeah, man. I'm up there watching Dave Dombrowski, you know, give everybody, hey, this is what went wrong. This is what we're going to do better. This is what we did for this guy. And I thought, oh, okay, well, maybe teams wait till after the World Series to do it or whatever. They didn't, man. I saw some postmortems from a bunch of different teams last week, and I was just kind of wondering. When is ours? I want to hear from the man.
So will you actually be on the Zoom news conference?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You're going to be on it?
I text my wife. I go, clear the decks. I got to be on a Zoom today.
For Padres fans, you will be able to hear it live here on 97.3 The Fan during the Annie and Elston program at 11 o'clock this morning.
I may even ask a question.
Really?
You never know.
I kind of know.
You never know.
Gonna have to, you know how to? Do you know how to do that on Zoom?
Yeah, you put your name in the chat, and then they'll call on you.
You raise your hand, or either put your name in the chat. Sometimes you have to raise your hand in the chat as well.
And then Craig will say, "Stephen Woods, 97.3 The Fan."
And then you turn on your camera.
Hey, AJ,
it's Woodsy.
Great season. What the hell happened?
Is that your question?
Yeah, my question. What happened?
Really?
Well, now they know not to call on you.
Yeah, 100%. If they're listening right now, they probably are. Hey, what happened?
Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning. What happened?
All right, we'll talk about don't expect from AJ's news conference and what he has to work with after these payroll projections that were written about, at least. They're not new, but they were written about over the weekend in the UT by Jeff Sanders.
Padres PR. All right, let's go to Adam Klude, 97.3 The Fan.
Hey. Yes?
Hello?
Is there any way you could make a graphic in case you guys exceed the luxury tax?
Will they? And can they do anything if they don't?
Adam goes, what did I do? You existed.
We will discuss right after traffic here on 97.3 The Fam. All right, keep in mind that a lot of these numbers are estimates, but for the most part, they're going to come in somewhere in the range that is predicted. And the ones that are a little low, there will also be some that are a little high. So overall, this should be a fairly accurate representation of at least where the Padres are headed payroll-wise in 2025, Woods. And according to the UT analysis by Jeff Sanders over the weekend, right now the Padres are committed to just under $200 million in actual salary for 2025.
Okay.
That includes raises for several players who are arbitration eligible, like Luis Arraez, who's projected to get $14.6 million, Dylan Cease at $13.7 million, Michael King at just under $8 million, Jason Adam at $5.3 million. Also includes contractual increases for players signed to long-term deals, like Fernando Tatis Jr. jumps up to $20 million this year. Jake Cronenworth will jump up to $11 million next year as well.
In 2025,
in 2025. Add it up all together, and if you bring back essentially the same team, you know, minus free agents who are leaving that aren't under contract, you're already committing close to $200 million. Now, that's the actual payroll. The luxury tax payroll is a different number because instead of the actual figures, that's based on the average annual value. So even though Manny Machado is only going to make $13 million next year, the average value of his contract is $30
million. You get banged for that.
So you get banged another $17 million for Manny. You get banged another $12 to $13, I believe, for Tatis. And according to SpotTrack, when you add up all those figures, Padres are projected to hit around $243 million on the luxury tax number, which is already $2 million over the tax threshold of $241 million. Ooh. So essentially, what we're saying is that if you wanted to just bring back the team as is without making a single free agent signing, you just wanted to, you know, give arbitration to the arbitration eligible guys and bring everybody back and run it back, you're already either at or over the luxury tax level right there before making a single move. It's a sobering thought for Padres fans who are hoping, you know, for activity in the free agent market, you know, picking up some new players. Not if the Padres want to stay below the luxury tax level like they did this year.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Now,
I'm letting that sink in. I want to really feel it.
Yeah.
It's like a shot of the worst alcohol you can drink.
When now, I read that in the UT and I saw, oh, 198.
We got $45 million
to spend.
No, you got, according to SpotTrack,
negative two million
to spend. You're going to actually have to shed some payroll to stay under that number this year.
Yeah.
Now, there's no rule that says you have to stay under it. And because the Padres did get under the luxury tax this year, all their penalties were reset.
Yep.
And they will be much lower if they go over, especially if they don't go over by a ton. So you could decide that, you know, there were a couple of players you wanted, go over again, and then deal with the consequences in 2026.
Yeah, because as it stands now, if you ran this thing back, you're looking at an outfield of Fernando Tatis Jr., Jackson Merrill, and then one of Brandon Lockridge, Bryce Johnson, or Tirso Ornelas. So.
Correct.
And then your catchers would be Luis Camposano and Brett Sullivan.
Correct.
Yeah. And then your starting five would be Darvish, Cease, King, Waldron, and Vasquez.
Correct.
Which, not much different than what you had at the beginning of the year, right? I mean, that's kind of what we rolled out there with for a while.
The middle chunk of the year.
The other is what really bugs me. The other is about $34 million that will not play at all. I mean, Joe Musgrove's hurt. Can't do anything about that. That is what it is. He's hurt. He'll be back in 26 or maybe at the very, very end of next year. But the Eric Hosmer, $13 million.
He seems healthy, actually.
Eric seems very healthy and active on social media and has had a real fun time just roasting people every single day and getting roasted in return. It's been really a sight to see during the playoffs. Playoff Hosmer hits different. But yeah.
Yeah, so that's why we signed him.
That's why we signed him. That's exactly why we signed him.
Now, there are ways you could, you know, lower the payroll to open up some room for free agents.
You
but
don't tender Arraez.
You could not offer arbitration to Luis Arraez. Or you could sign him to a long-term deal at a lower average value.
But you still have control
of him. Million.
You could trade him.
You could trade any of these players. Dylan Cease, Luis Arraez, Michael King.
Yep.
I don't know that trading any of those players makes your team better, though, in 2025. The trick is, how do you get better without getting way more expensive and going over the luxury tax?
And you don't have the giant, massive chip of Juan Soto that you can trade for five players. And again, I understand, and this was one of the points Hosmer made over the weekend that I didn't necessarily agree with. He said, somebody said, the Yankees and the Padres both essentially won the Juan Soto trade. I think that's a fair way to look at it. The Yankees very happy to have Juan Soto. They gave up five pieces to get him, but those five pieces really helped this team, get to, albeit a very disappointing playoff exit or early exit, but we don't get there without those guys. And Eric said, no, you only win a trade if you win the World Series. And I said, well, that's not true. That's categorically false. To win a trade, you do not have to win a World Series. We are all in agreement on that, right?
I agree.
Yes. You do not have to win a World Series.
I mean, if you want to go by statistically, is the WAR of Juan Soto, which was 7.9,
yeah,
more or less than the WAR of the players that you acquired?
Correct.
Now, are you counting Dylan Cease among those players? Because you
absolutely am.
Drew Thorpe, but also other players to get him. So there's no way to specifically totally account for that number, but when you combine Michael
it's
King,
it's not unheard of that AJ could have still went and got Dylan Cease,
Kyle Gashioka, Randy Vasquez, Drew Brito, and some portion of Dylan Cease. Yeah, you absolutely can say the Padres got more WAR out of that than the Yankees got out of Juan Soto.
Yeah, right.
Juan Soto wins World Series MVP for the New York Yankees, which we're all hoping is the case, then you could just say they definitely won. Both teams won, but they won more.
Plus, you also, they only have Juan Soto for this year.
Right.
Now, they may re-sign him, but that has nothing to do with the trade. The Padres have Michael King, Randy Vasquez in their rotation probably for next year. That is also part of the value of the trade that you made. Ultimately, the Padres are going to numerically win that trade pretty handily, and the Yankees won't care, especially if they win a World Series. But like from value that AJ got back for Juan Soto, he's going to have a pretty clear win in that trade.
Yeah, but again, you don't have that big chunk that you can move that people are clamoring for. AJ cut a ton of money last year and had a good season. So I guess your hope is that he's able to finagle that again. But, hope is something to hang your hat on. But it certainly is more dire than even I expected at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the part that concerns me the most is, and we won't get an answer from AJ Preller as to, hey, are you going to be able to go over the luxury tax?
Yeah.
I promise you that even if it's asked, and it probably will be asked, there will be no definitive answer on that from AJ or Eric Kutsenda or anyone else in the Padres front office. Again, we still don't have the answer to that question from
last year,
last offseason. Yeah. We only have the Padres did, the moves that they made, and the fact that they shed over $90 million in payroll to get under the luxury tax to make us believe that that was the goal, was, shedding a bunch of payroll. Now, could AJ argue? No. I was free to spend as much as I wanted. I just thought this was the best version of our team that had us shedding $90-plus million of payroll. And look, I may have been right. We were on the doorstep of, the National League Championship Series and maybe the World Series. We won the second most games in franchise history. Did I do something wrong? No, I just put the best team together possible. Just happened to be a lot cheaper than it was in 2023, in 2024. So we won't get an answer to that question today.
Well, they'll be judged on what the team looks like on opening day, as they always are, as every team
Which
is.
Also is not necessarily fair.
Correct, because it was a totally different team at the end of the year.
The team that the Padres put together on opening day. The Padres, more than anyone else, is rarely the team that you get later in the season as well.
No question.
So it's a moving target. The scale that we're grading on is sliding always when it comes to the San Diego Padres and AJ Preller.
Yeah, and I guess after last season, the early exit notwithstanding, I think a pretty good job was done by AJ Preller last year to get this team, to have them ready, at least to make that run. And running it back is just a weird thing. It's a gut thing. It's a recency bias thing where you look at it and go, yeah, if we run it back, the same thing will happen. That's just not the case. It rarely is the case. I like consistency. I do like the guys that are here right now. I just feel like there's not a lot you can do with what, you have the guys. There's not a lot you can do. There's not a lot of flexibility. So running it back may be our only option. And then you're still going to have to add there's still pieces that need to be added. So I don't know how they're going
to
do that.
Yeah, I think it would be foolish to ever doubt AJ's, you know, creativity or work ethic in putting a roster together. But I do worry when you look at potentially trying to stay under the luxury tax and going, even re-signing Kyle Higashioka looks like it would be
like a stretch,
like prohibitive and a stretch at this point. And that's just to have your catcher position basically with a couple of, you know, backup options as your starter. Not,
and Jerkson Profar. I mean, if those numbers are true, he's as good as gone.
Yeah, just bringing those two guys back would blow you way over the luxury tax number. Assuming everyone else returns, just getting those two guys back to put the same team on the field is going to be more expensive and more difficult to do next season. So, yeah, AJ's got his work cut out for him. I mean, he had even more. I mean, last year, to say he didn't have his work, that was insane what he did. To cut 90-plus million in payroll, even to put a last-place team on the field would be tough to do for most general managers. To put a 93-win team on the field when you do that was ridiculous. So he's earned some trust and some faith. He's got another tough job this offseason.
You know, the other way to look at that, though, is he's had some trust and he's had some faith. And I think, you know, if it doesn't work out, I mean, it was such a great job. He did such a brilliant job at you know, getting them ready and building that bullpen and all of that. But, you know, can you do it again? And maybe the payroll restrictions are even a little bit more stringent this year, because again, you don't have that big chip you can unload that whacks a big number off of your bottom line, and you get a bunch of prospects and stuff back for. I mean, creativity is, you can be as creative as you want. You got to have players that you feel that you can move while not costing yourself, you know, wins.
This segment of Ben and Woods brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Buffalo Wild Wings is football. B-Dubs is kicking off football season with two limited-time sauces. Try their new Buffalo Bacon Sauce for bold notes of smoky bacon, or get the fan-favorite hot barbecue before it's gone. Try them at your local B-Dubs or order now for takeout and delivery with Buffalo Wild Wings Go. We've got John Sterling, the voice of the Yankees, legendary voice of the Yankees, going to join us in our 8 o'clock hour. I also have a neighbor question for you.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
That, I just need your advice. We'll get to that coming up next with Ben Woods on 97.3 The Fan.